You are listening to Generation Radio. The podcast about Doctor Who. With Callum, Shell, and Mike.
You. I'm Shell, and I am accompanied by my friends Mike and Callum, who may or may not be my brother. We don't know yet.
We're going to need to do a blood test DNA test on a podcast.
We'll get to that.
We can do it Jeremy Kyle style, where at the end Mike can be like he can pull it out of an envelope. We can be sitting on a chair, and then whatever the answer is, we just start chucking chairs around the room.
There we go. That's a great idea. Let's do that. Anyway, today we're going to be discussing the writers of the beloved series of Doctor Who. As we know, there have been many, many different writers throughout time and space. So we'll just have an open table discussion about who our favorite writers are, maybe even talk about our least favorite episode writers, and carry on. Take it away, Mike.
Well, why do I have to start? Like, can't Callum start because he's
don't
British.
Don't question the leader.
I will never question the leader.
I am leading the conversation.
Well, like, for me, the writers of Doctor Who, it's such a broad subject to speak about, but I will try my best to, like, I'm going to go with the basic answer that my favorite writer of Doctor Who is Russell T. Davies. No shocker there, I hope. Yeah. But it's not because the specific episode he wrote. I'm more like the arc he created with, you know, the whole bad wolf scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And not only the bad wolf, also that you have the... you keep coming back to bad wolf, but you're also coming back to, you know, when he was the head writer, the Saxon era, and you have the Donna, like the premonitions of Dr. Donna, stuff like that. Things that we see even in the newer episodes, like, spoiler alert for everyone who hasn't seen the latest episodes, but the Dr. Donna actually comes back. Kind of. Everyone knows that Donna Noble is in the new episode, I hope. But otherwise, if you haven't seen the trailers, you have missed something. But it's, for me, that's really good writing. And that's why I hold Russell T. Davies in such high regards, because the example I'm going to go with is the Bad Wolf arc. And, you know, during the first season with Christopher Eccleston and Billy Piper as Rose and a Doctor, this bad wolf words are coming back in different kind of scenarios. Like, it's written on the TARDIS, for instance. The name of the company who owns Satellite, is it Satellite 5 or Satellite 9?
Satellite 5? Yes, 5, right? Now he said 9, now I'm questioning it, but it's Satellite 5, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's the Bad Wolf Corporation. When they go to Wales, it's Bad Wolf or Bad Drug, I think it's called.
Blythdrug.
Sorry. And then you have Bad Wolf Bay. Like, you know, you have this word that keeps following, and no one actually understands the meaning of it until it connects to this Bad Wolf thing. And then... spoiler there also, by the way, that Rose goes to the parallel universe, you know, when they meet at Bad Wolf Bay in Norway. And I actually don't know if that's a real place or not, but the word they're saying...
The beach is real, but I don't think the beach is called Bad Wolf Bay.
No.
It's.
Are you
it's
sure the beach is real, though?
I'm pretty sure the beach is real, isn't it? It's... I think it's I don't think it's in England, but it is real.
Yeah, I think they're actually in Norway. It looks like Norway. Sandy and cold. Sorry, I'm Swedish.
Never mind, I just googled it. It is the UK.
Oh, never mind then.
Southern down.
Yeah, but still, you know, it's called Bad Wolf Bay. You say your goodbyes, and then the Bad Wolf word is forgotten by everyone until you have the Turn Left episode. And, you know, in the end, Donna, like, describes Rose Tyler. And the doctor goes, like, what did you say? What did you say? And Donna just go, like, bad wolf. And then you have the words crossed everywhere. And I think it's just brilliant, you know, arc writing. That you're connecting the doctor to this. We know from this season that bad wolf is something that's connected with bad. And then bad wolf just turns up everywhere. And I think Russell T. Davies actually did that brilliantly.
Instead of just like putting it like bad wolf, just like wherever willy-nilly.
Yeah, and you know, like he has the translation in Welsh to bad wolf and stuff like that, you know. And I think it's Eccleston who just, you know, throws it away. Like, oh, bad wolf project. But probably a coincidence. Like,
like when the kid like graffitied the TARDIS is a bad wolf.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, he just discarded it. But then in the end it ties up so well. And it becomes this, you know, I think all Whovians connects bad wolf with like something bad, something disastrous.
And so, obviously yeah. Now it's a real production company. They're the ones currently producing Doctor Who, Bad Wolf Productions.
They're
currently working on the show.
Which is kind of funny. Because, like, you know, we are high-wired that Bad Wolf is something, you know, connected to the end of the universe, and then they have a production company. So
they're the ones making the universe.
Yeah. But that's my take. Like, this is why I keep Russell T. Davies in such high regard. Then we can go into specific ones, but now I've been talking for 6 minutes, so someone else can talk about their favorite writer.
Well, do you want me to go next, Shell, or did you want to go next?
Yeah, you can go ahead, Callum.
Okay. I mean, I agree with Mike in the sense that I think my favorite overall writer is Russell T. Davies. I mean, as a showrunner, I think he just is like, not just the way he brought back the show, and like, you know, like that was incredible, the way that he was able to bring back a show that had been off the air for so long and completely modernize it, but still keeping the connection to the past. But it was a real feat to do, and he pulled it off really well. So, but I don't want to go too much into him because obviously I know Mike has, but on a, like, I guess episode by episode basis, I think I do need to talk about Stephen Moffat a little bit. His tenure as a showrunner, I think, was great. I mean, I think it got a bit iffy towards the end. But not even like looking at those episodes, but looking at the ones that he wrote during the Tennant era, like Blink, Silence in the Library, and Forest of the Dead. Those ones, like, I mean, Silence in the Library and Forest of the Dead are two of my favorite episodes. It's amazing, just like the story itself, but then the way that he also incorporates River Song into it, and it's, you know, it was this character that was just so naturally well played. Like, she just knew the Doctor, and creating that character, they just interacted with the Doctor so well and just so naturally was like, again, like, it must have been like really hard to do. And it, you know, obviously watching it for the first time, it really got me intrigued. And then obviously she comes back, spoilers. But if I go back and rewatch that episode now, it's the same character that, you know, goes on throughout all that time. And he he's an incredible showrunner, again, but like, just even like his individual episodes that he wrote were just so impressive. I mean, obviously Blink, I think it's one of the highest rating episodes out there. So, you know, like he definitely deserves a special place in the writers just for those stories alone.
Yeah, like Moffat, I'm not saying Moffat is bad. Never think that I think Moffat is bad. But if I compare Moffat and Russell T. Davis, if we're going to go, like, as you see, I focus a lot on the arcs. I felt like the Bad Wolf arc was better written than, for instance, the final question, the last question on the Fields of Trancelor. Because the Bad Wolf was such an unexpected. It was not, you know, put in front of our eyes in that way like the last question was and the whole silence thing. But when it comes to Moffat, like, one of my favorite episodes of all time is The Girl in the Fireplace. And that's also Stephen Moffat. I don't know if anyone else holds it that high, but I absolutely love that episode. So on an individual basis, I think Moffat has done some really, really, really extremely well thought together episodes. I just feel like arc-wise, he's not on the same level as Russell T. Davis. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I mean, I think some of the... I think Russell T. Davis did the arcs really well. I think they did become a little bit forced after that. I think especially during, like, Peter Capaldi and, you know, like, Matt Smith, like, as well, they just become so obvious what the arc is. It used to be so subtle with Bad Wolf and Harold Saxon. You just couldn't really see it coming. The Dr. Donna as well was a bit more on the nose. But, I mean, Russell T. Davis's last one that he did during that time, the He Will Knock Four Times, that one was just obviously very obvious. I don't think they were really trying to hide it. But then it never went subtle again after that.
Like, when it comes to He Will Knock Four Times, the thing was, everyone thought that they were talking about the master. And then it turns out it's not the master.
That's true.
That was a shock for me, though. But, like... Yeah, I still believe... Like, this is just my personal opinion, and if people don't agree, please put a comment on this. But I feel like Russell T. Davis was a better arc creator.
Yeah.
And Moffat is more like an individual episode specialist. Because he has some really good episodes under his belt. Then he has some really bad episodes under his belt as well. Sorry to say. But for instance, for those who don't know, I did a little research thing on Twitter. No, not Twitter. Reddit. And people talk a lot about their favorite episode is World Enough and Time. And The Doctor Falls.
Yeah.
Which got a lot of upvotes as well. And when I start, I rewatched them, and they're really, really great episodes. And that's also Stephen Moffat. So it's like, he has some of these, like, I don't like Extremis, for instance, from Series 10. And that's a Moffat episode. Like, I really don't like that one. And The Pyramid at the End of the World, like, those two feels weird for me. And then you compare it to The Doctor Falls, and, like, it doesn't seem like it's written by the same person. So I think, like, Moffat's a little bit inconsistent, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, Shell, who's your favorite writer? You haven't said anything.
I was absorbing what you guys were talking about and trying not to interrupt Callum because what I was going to say.
Oh, no! No, it's okay. It's like, no, but are they this it's for your reasons.
Well, yeah, like Steven. I'm just gonna call him Steven because I don't wanna like Moffat. So he wrote one of my favorite episodes and the episode that I recommend to people who say are kind of on the fence of Doctor Who, like, do I really want to watch this? Do I really want to add another sci-fi show to my list of things to watch? I always recommend the episode Blink. To me, that's my favorite episode, even though it's so many other people's favorite episodes. I was like, do I like any niche episodes? I was like, I keep coming back to Blink. Even though, yeah, the Doctor wasn't in that episode a whole lot, but the Weeping Angels, like, come on, that's so freaking scary. And one of my first comic conventions, I had a custom drawing of a Weeping Angel that I'm still trying to figure out how to get as a tattoo, because I want it, you know, to be like, you know, they're hiding their face and then they're like, you know, scary face, but like in one tattoo. Anyway, but then I was also trying to think of, you know, maybe some lesser, you know, showrunners, writers. So I was thinking, what about like a couple of the episodes that maybe Neil Gaiman helped with, or, you know, Paul Cornell, he has, you know, written episodes for both classic and the revived series, and also his contributions in the expanded universe in novels and comics and audio, what are those called? Audio dramas and spin-off media. So, yeah. Which I thought was kind of cool, like several different novels of Doctor Who. And I was like, at first I was like, no, there's not novels of that. That's so cool. I knew there were comics, but I didn't really know that there were novels. Yeah. And then I ended up downloading them. So I was like, I'll read these at work. So I'm really excited to have like new content to read. And they're all tie-in with the universe. And I love expanding universes other than just what you see and hear about, because it really helps like tie up speculations.
Yeah.
You know, like the what ifs, you know, because these are the what ifs.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah.
I mean, I guess then the question is like, because I mean, even in the classic era, in like, obviously the one thing is, you know, Russell C. Davis and Stephen Moffat, to an extent, still had this material from the years before, but you've still got, like, I mean, the people who created the Daleks, the Time Lords, Gallifrey, like, I mean, I wonder if then they knew what they were creating when they were coming up with these, like, pillars of the whole thing.
Oh, sorry, I just realized that my mic be muted. Hi.
Oh, no.
No, like, I was quite interested when you said that we have a novelist that also do some episodes, and I started researching while we were talking. Just this, you know, how they're expanding the universe outside of, you know, the things we can see on TV or Disney Plus or whatever wherever you watch Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And it feels like, I don't know who is the person who brings it all together. I know, like, when we talk about Star Wars, you know, you always have the creative director that says this is canon and this is not canon. But looking at, for instance, Paul Cornell, some of the novels he's written has actually made it into Doctor Who canon later on in the series.
The Meep.
Yeah, the Meep.
Yeah.
And several, like, I was researching while we were discussing, and I see that in The Rings of Akathen, that episode, you know, you know, the Doctor goes around and pointing to different things, and all of these things are things from novels. So I think, like, you have this broad universe from the books that the writers then can just work into the TV episodes, and probably the big the audio dramas as well. And oh, there is so many writers I want to talk about then, but we don't have that. For instance, shall mention Gaiman.
Yeah, chef kiss.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, I don't know that many episodes that are written by him. I know Nightmare in Silver is one where
There were only, I think, two episodes written by him. So like, I was, like, saying, like, you know, just, like, they pick, like, oh, Neil Gaiman, hey, can you write us an episode of Doctor Who? And he's like, yeah, sure, let me do that.
So he's done, it was The Doctor's Wife was one of his, and Nightmare in Silver.
But it feels like he's been, you know, connected more to the Who universe.
Well, he did. So he's done also, because he did Rain Gods as well, the mini episode with Matt Smith and River.
Yeah.
He did some of the stuff during the lockdown. I know he did Rory's Story, which was that was during COVID. I don't know actually if he did any others, but I know he did Rory's Story.
Yeah, and this is... sorry?
I said that's a fun tongue twister, Rory's Story.
Rory's Story.
Yeah, try to be a non-English speaker and say that one. No, but, like, Gaiman is, you know, creating these kind of, you know, little pockets of extra content that you can then build into the Hooniverse. And I'm going to call it the Hooniverse, not the universe, but
Hooniverse.
Hooniverse. And I think it's important to, you know, take those writers as well that are applying their own kind of twist and their own kind of canon to Doctor Who that then gets picked up. Where was I going with this? I had something really... I don't know if I'm pronouncing this name right now, but Helen Rayner was series 3.
Right.
Did Daleks in Manhattan and Evolution of the Daleks.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, how... That, you know, we were in New York during the Depression, yada, yada, yada. But how those Daleks then builds on to become these new Daleks we meet later on in the later series and stuff like that. And how you have this, you know, what's it called? I can't remember the name of the episode now, where we go to World War II. We meet Winston Churchill.
Victory of the Daleks.
Victory of the Daleks. You know, you have those Daleks in Daleks on Manhattan, and then they build up to Journey's End, the Daleks in Journey's End, or the Stolen Earth. And then we come back to Victory of the Daleks, where the new Daleks, the original Daleks makes a comeback and say, like, oh, you are unclean, we're gonna purge you because you're not the right Daleks. And it all starts with, you know, Daleks in Manhattan, where they're, you know, they're starting kind of mixing with the humans.
Yeah.
And I think that's also a very important thing to take up when you discuss the writers. Like, I don't think Helen Rayner, am I saying her last name right?
Helen
Rayner.
Helen Rayner.
R-A-Y-N-O-R. Reyna. Right?
Is it, you're talking about one of the writers, yeah?
Yeah.
She wrote Daleks in Manhattan. Helen Reyna.
And then she did Sontaran's Stratagem and Poison Sky, which is also two very underrated episodes. But I don't think, you know, Helen had this in mind that a thing she started in Daleks of Manhattan would then become a thing later on, like you can bind it together. But it binds together. And I think it's, from a writing perspective, it's kind of cool that, you know, you take one thing, you have an idea as a writer, and then suddenly another writer is using this later on, like, oh, they did this. Because if you compare to other big franchises, and now I'm going to go way here and compare Doctor Who to Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in Marvel, even if you're a writer of something, you have someone from upstairs, like, pressuring, okay, this needs to be here, you can't do this because it needs to connect to this thing we're doing in Phase 94 or whatever. But it feels like in Doctor Who, when you're a writer there, you are allowed to do, you know, you have a lot of creative freedom. And in most ways, that's really good. Sometimes it turns out badly. I'm not a timeless child. But when you have this creative freedom and you can put some things into canon that someone else then can keep building on, I think it's really a really good thing for the universe as well.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Sorry for my rambling, but I just love those episodes.
So, what about exploring episode, like, episodes, writers that we weren't super huge fans of?
Chris Chibnall.
Yeah.
The thing is with Chris Chibnall, he's written some, like, The Power of Three, for example, was one of his. He introduced Kate Lethbridge-Stewart to Doctor Who. And that was such, like, a good episode, seeing the Doctor mix with Amy and Rory and trying to kind of settle into, like, this human life and everything. And obviously he wrote Broadchurch as well, which I loved. And that had Jodie Whittaker and David Tennant in it, and Arthur Darvill and, like, half of the Doctor Who cast. And that was, again, that was amazing what he wrote. So I was actually really excited when it was announced that it was going to be him. And then he just kind of... It's like he wanted to be controversial in terms of, like, going back and, like, you know... I mean, first of all, spending the whole season having no references to the past, pretty much. Like, apart from, like, you know, like, the odd little thing here and there, he didn't want to have any familiar monsters, he didn't want to do any of that, which, you know, was all cool and everything, but, you know, there is something special about bringing older monsters to interact with the Doctor, that there is some, because it shows this progression character. Otherwise, it could be a whole new character every time, you know. But then... The next season, he decided to almost only go with the past just so we could change everything. And, like, you know, I'm not completely against the whole timeless child thing. I just think it was done terribly. You know, I think when, you know, you, like, I mean, just taking, also kind of erasing William Hartnell as the first Doctor and all that, but it is what it is, it's whatever, but. Like, I mean, a small thing that always bothers me is, like, the Doctor calling themselves the Doctor and having the police box before William Hartnell, when it was, like, he was the one that did all that, you know? And at that point, you're kind of taken away that from... Like, going back and changing the, like, an origin story is always really kind of tricky. And I just kind of... I don't think he really thought about it that much. I think he kind of just thought he wanted to do it and then did it and didn't really... look into the best way on doing it, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense, I think.
No, I agree. Like, I have... when it comes to Chibnall, he wrote 42, which is, for me, it's a really great episode. like you have this, you know, creature going around a spaceship they really don't know, but it turns out the creature is just kind of misunderstood because, without spoiling too much. And then he did The Hungry Earth and introduced us to the Silurians.
Yeah.
Again, like you have all of these. Reintroduce is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And like The Hungry Earth and Cold Blood was not, it's not in my top 10, but they're still good episodes. And that feels like, you know, really Whovian. And then you come to when he took over as showrunner. And I totally agree with you here, Callum. Like, it felt like he erased too much of the past without acknowledging the past we have. And then suddenly he does The Power of the Doctor, where we meet a lot of the past. But since it's already erased some of the past, it was like, I had very mixed feelings. Like, The Power of the Doctor is a pretty good episode. But since he did, you know, the whole fugitive doctor and stuff like that within his writing, it created less effect. It was great to see the old doctors again in The Power of the Doctor.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the same effect because now we have, like, you know, who came after the fugitive doctor? How many doctors are there?
Yeah. Why does the fugitive doctor call themselves the Doctor, and why do they have a blue police box as a TARDIS?
Yeah.
When the reason that the TARDIS broke was because the first time William Hartnell used it, the chameleon circuit broke, and now all of a sudden it was always
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So, Chibnall, like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm a little bit biased against Chris Chibnall because I really don't like his writing. But that's also, like, I think it's universally in the Whovianverse that it didn't become great when he took over because, you know, the ratings were dropping. And, like, I feel that Jodie Whittaker, she tried to create her own Doctor, but the writing was not good enough for her Doctor. Like, I feel Whittaker is a really great actress, but the writing kind of limited her to what she could do with the Doctor. Like, I want to see Whittaker under, like, Russell T. Davis.
Well, if you look at Jodie Whittaker under Chris Chibnall, but on Broadchurch, she's amazing.
Yeah.
She's really good in it. And then there's another show that she did, I think, called Doctors, which she was in, which, again, was really, really good. But, yeah, no, she definitely didn't get any chance to shine in her Doctor Who era as much as I think anyone would have liked her to.
And the whole thing with the Flux, like, I don't know.
Again, I think the Flux was a really good idea.
It just got really poorly executed.
I think having what are they called? The that secret Time Lord society.
Oh yeah.
Those guys.
The Division.
What'd you say?
Wasn't it The Division?
The Division, like, that's it, yeah. And then we see Tek Tayoun, the Doctor's mum. And then she's dead within 5 minutes of us meeting her, and it's like...
Spoiler alert, by the way, guys.
Spoiler alert. So, yeah, it's... And then I agree with you on The Power of the Doctor. I think that, again, could have been a really amazing episode, and then it just kind of felt a bit all over. There is actually one thing. This is a little bit off topic, but I do want to point this... Every time we change writer or change showrunner or whatever, can we stop resetting the master back to just complete evil? Like, we had John Sim, who is the last time we saw him, he sacrifices himself. And then Missy comes along, and the Doctor doesn't really question it until we see the John Sim master later on. But, like, so the Missy comes back is just back to evil again. And then Sacha Dhawan comes along after Missy like redeems herself and like has this massive arc and she's good at the end, and then he's completely evil, and like the Doctor doesn't even acknowledge like the last time that they saw the Master. It's just like, oh, you're evil. I just wish they'd stop resetting at the beginning of it. Like, is it going to happen at the next one? Like, when the Master comes back again? Is he just going to be completely evil? Like,
do we think the Master is coming back again, though? Because, like...
Yeah, mate.
Personally, I hope they bring back some other Time Lord. Like, bring back a younger Rassilon or something. I don't know.
Mate, the last time we saw the Master, he was being picked up again.
Yeah, I know.
We're definitely going to see him again.
But it's like, you know, I agree with you. Like, the writing for the Master, like, I like the Mrs. arc. And then they just reset it and like, okay, here's the Master, he's bad again. Like, okay, what happened between? Why did John Sim's Master become evil again after he sacrificed himself to take down the Time Lords?
Well, that can kind of be explained that he wasn't saving the Doctor or sacrificing himself. He was just trying to kill Rassilon. I don't think he'd necessarily become good there. I think he was just really, really pissed off.
Yeah, I would also because be pissed
then he
off
comes back. It. Then he comes back with the 12th Doctor, like with Missy, just after that moment. Well, a little bit after that moment, but you know, he's still evil. Like, I just don't think he. But it was Missy had this massive arc. And then that's it.
Yeah. Like, but yeah, I agree with you. Like, stop resetting the Master.
Yeah.
It's like, what I feel was good now with the new season we got. And like, here's the thing. I think Shell needs to, you know, cover her ears here because this is going to be some spoilers, but...
No, spoiler.
What I think was good when the new season came out was that, of course, you have David Tennant back, but you also get, you know, some reference back to the older Doctors and mm-hmm. to the old foes, and you get this kind of nostalgia trip before you go forward.
Yeah.
Like, of course, bringing David Tennant back would be a nostalgia trip, whatever you do, because you're bringing back a Doctor that's already been a Doctor. And you call him the Doctor again, and it's like, okay, you have some explanations to do here, or you have some explaining to do is the word I'm looking for. But then this Doctor kind of acknowledged that, yeah, I have a past. And, you know, he mentions the Flux. He mentions all companions, or the episode mentions all companions. And you get this kind of nostalgic writing before you can take the step forward, and how they introduced the new Doctor while, you know, reminiscing of the old times was actually pretty well done.
Yeah.
But if they work in the Master in this season, I think it would be a little bit too early to work in the Master here.
Yeah. Because
writing-wise, I don't know who the writers are for the new season. I only found, like, 2 episodes. And it's Russell T. Davis. He wrote The Church on Ruby Road. But I also know that that was kind of a fan fiction he picked up. And then
I think they release the writers the same time they release like the episode names and stuff. So I think we'll get that all a little bit later.
No, because I know the Devil's Chord. They have released that name, and it's directed by Ben Chessel, but who it's written by, they haven't released yet. But then I did some research earlier. It was episode 6 or 7 in the new series. It's written by Kate Herron and Bryony Redman. So it's going to be interesting to see who's the writers here and, like, give the new Doctor a possibility to, you know, create this new persona before you bring in the Master again. That's why I hope.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know who Kate Herron is, she's a writer. the most the most famous thing I think she'd done is she was the director for Sex Education.
And yeah.
I think she was the director for Loki as well.
Well, I got a lot. Shell, what about you? Do you have, like, a least favorite writer?
No. I don't really have a super least favorite writer. But I might want to give Matthew Graham as my least favorite writer, just because he wrote probably like my least favorite episode. And it's like the episode that when I'm rewatching, I just skip that episode. Do you remember the one where they went to like the Olympics?
Fear.
Yeah, that episode.
Yeah.
The kid, Chloe, can trap people in her drawings and it became real and it was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
it's just like an episode that I didn't really think was like, I don't know if what he was trying to convey was like came to fruition, but it did explore good themes, loneliness, fear, the power of imagination. But like, I hated that. Like, it was a kid. And I was like, why does it have to be a kid? What if it was like some beautiful work of art or something, you know, instead of a child?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, he did have like good episodes he wrote after. It was with the 11th Doctor.
Rebel,
that one.
Rebel and that, yeah, that little two.
Rebel Flesh and Almost People, right?
Yeah, that duo episode was, I thought that was really spectacular. And I was like, why couldn't he do that earlier? what happened? But anyway, I really like the Rebel Flesh and the Almost People like duo episode. I don't know if it has like a formal name, two-parter. I don't like that. That sounds weird. But I thought that was just so fun. And like the workers were, you know, gangster, you know, they were called gangster. I was like, that's so fun. And but then like Fear Her, I just it's like the dinner party episode of The Office in the US version. I always skip that episode because it's...
It's the thing with Doctor Who, isn't it? They have all these episodes and then you got something like... what was his... The cousin or whatever of the Slitheen. The Absorber.
Oh, Love and Monsters. Oh,
the
no.
The Absorber. Oh.
That episode brings...
I just watched that recently, too.
No, but
this is so silly.
That Clom. Episode.
That was a Clom.
Yeah. What's the sister planet of Richter Fellow Pretorius? Clom.
The thing is, I don't want to talk about the monster too bad because that was actually made by a fan.
I like the monster. I just thought that was strange.
It was a 9-year-old, but I'm pretty sure that the 9-year-old only designed the Absorber Loft. And didn't actually write the story, even though it felt like it was written by a 9-year-old.
It did, but...
This is a Russell T. Davies episode as well. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I know.
No, but if we're going to go down the rabbit hole that is Love and Monsters episode, this is an episode I skip all the time. I can sit through Fear Her, because I feel like you're exploring... a little bit more of the companion there. But Love and Monsters for me is just... I like the monster, but everything else is absolute bonkers. I don't even like the name of the monster. Like, Absorbeloff, even if it's made by a kid, and I'm sorry to the kid, like, you created a really great monster, but the name, no. And the ending... Like, you upset my mum.
Oh.
When Rose comes out and you're like, you upset my mum. Like,
yeah.
There is this thing happening. The absorbable of it's eaten. What is it? Four people. But
it's like a monster Teletubby. Just all these like like talking things in its belly. Like,
yeah. And there is a line in that episode that for me isn't Doctor Who. And it's like, oh, we have kind of a love life. She's a face in, oh, what do you call it? In a, I actually forgot the name of the thing now, but you know, a concrete square?
Yeah, the concrete slab.
Yeah.
Oh, slab.
She's a face in a slab, and they put in the line, we can have quite a kind of a love life. That for me,
I don't need to have that image in my head.
No, and like the grown-ups understand it in one way, kids will understand it in a different way. But when you realize what they're actually talking about, it's like this does not belong in Doctor Who.
There's that, and it's also Jackie trying to seduce the main character. It's a really horny episode now that I think about it.
Yeah, and it doesn't belong in Doctor Who. I'm sorry. But the music is good.
Music is Murray Gold, yeah. He is gold.
No, the song they're playing, it's... Oh, what's your band called?
Oh,
it's a famous song.
I don't know.
Something Light Orchestra.
It's also not the last time Linda's mentioned, is it? Because Linda's mentioned again in the little short with the Fifth Doctor and the Tenth Doctor.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So it's like... Yeah, I don't know. I can spend an hour talking about Love and Monsters. No problem. But that is probably my absolute least favorite. That's the episode I skip when I rewatch Doctor Who.
To be fair, for me, I mean, I'll make this quick because I know it'll be going on a while, but also Orphan 55.
Oh, yeah.
Benny!
Oh, Jesus. I'd like to apologize for all the listeners for that sound. No, but...
It's our new croissant.
No.
Benny croissant.
No, it's like... We should probably make an episode or like a thing for the Patreon where we just discuss, you know, bad episodes, why we don't watch them. Because I have a few, like, I put up the list now of all the Doctor Who episodes. And there are several episodes where I kind of need to think, wait, which one is this? And then I remember, oh, it's this one. I always skip that one. Not that many during Capaldi era, but Whittaker era has some of them. Tennant era has like three of them. And this is probably a hot take, but the Pandorica Opens was not a favorite episode of mine.
I like the Pandorica Opens.
I think we will have to do another episode where we discuss these ones.
Yeah. Okay.
Spend
an hour shit talking Doctor Who episodes. I love it.
Yeah, as long as we shouldn't become, you know, Star Wars fandom where we just talk shit about everything. But we can down talk some episodes.
We can change the name of the channel to Doctor Who Theory.
I think that's already taken.
Oh, damn. All right. Well.
No, but I think we covered most of the writers we wanted to talk about. I just want to do one quick shout out to Robert Sherman. Or is it Chairman? I think it's Sherman. Who wrote Dalek in the Revival. Series 1 from the Revival.
That's
a really good episode.
Yeah.
And that was a good way to reintroduce the Daleks without having, you know, an army of Daleks killing everything.
Yeah.
But all I can think about now when I see that episode now is a reference to, you know, the Star Wars movie. You know, they fly now,
when, they fly now.
When the Dalek starts to levitate. No, but do we feel like we have gotten our what we want to say out, or is there anything we need to honorably mention? English hard.
I think I've said my piece. Pieces.
No, I'm good.
Are you sure you're good?
Yeah.
All wait, right. No.
Yeah, I just hold on. Wait. No, I'm joking. No,
wait.
I'm
good. Okay. Okay. So we're done.
I think we're done. we should probably remind everyone to follow us on our social media. And we can sit here and do 550 different ways of social media, or you can just go to Linktree. How do I even say this?
Linktree.
/regeneration radio, and you will find all our social media there. And if you follow us there, you will get some updates. We're gonna start doing more updates now when Shell has her new phone. There is also a link to our Discord where you can discuss directly with us, and you can give us some pointers or anything you want us to cover. And as always, hang out with us, and we do watch along sometimes. And if you're in the Discord, you might be able to join. We should probably talk about next week as well. What are we discussing next week?
Ooh, that is a good question.
What are we discussing next week?
Our favorite episodes and why.
Yeah, so we are going to go through everyone. Everyone is going to prepare their favorite episode and why this is their favorite episode.
And oh, I got a dissertation for you, Mike.
Oh, yeah. I promise my favorite episode that I'm going to talk about will shock everyone. We're also probably going to talk a little bit more about our least favorite episodes. Because, you know, you need something to compare with. But that's for next week, next Sunday. Around midnight Swedish time, the episode goes.
Be out. There.
Be there or be like SpongeBob's pants.
Yeah.
Bye.
Goodbye, everyone. Take care now.